This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Picture this. It's about, say, 10:30 at night. You've had dinner. You're finally unwinding. Maybe catching up on that show everyone's talking about. And then your phone buzzes. It's your manager. Quick question. Those two words that are never actually quick. You glance at the message and suddenly your evening is hijacked. Your mind races. Should you respond now? Can it wait until morning? But what if they think you're not dedicated? What if this affects your next appraisal? Now here's the thing. This isn't a hypothetical scenario for millions of Indians. This is Tuesday, this is Thursday, this is every single day of their working lives. Tonight on Nelson John 360, I'm deep diving into what might be one of the most important conversations related to work-life balance. We're going to unpack why India is one of the most overworked nations on the planet, why young professionals are drawing hard lines in the sand, and why some of our most prominent business leaders are still advocating for 70, even 90-hour work weeks. By the end of this episode, you'll understand exactly what's at stake for workers, for companies, and for the very soul of Indian ambition.
You're listening to Nelson John 360.
Nelson John 360.
Hey friends, welcome back to Nelson John 360. All right, today is a very contested topic, you know, work-life balance. Let us start off with a number. You know, it stopped me in my tracks when I was researching this episode. It is believed that the average Indian worker clocks 46.7 hours per week. Now, that might not sound earth-shattering until you realize that more than half of our workforce, 51%, is actually working beyond 49 hours weekly. We're not talking about that occasional crunch period before a product launch. We're talking about sustained, relentless, week after week grinding. And the consequences, they're showing up in ways we can't ignore anymore. 78% of the Indian workforce reports experiencing burnouts. Let that sink in. Nearly 8 out of every 10 working professionals in this country are running on empty. They're exhausted, they're stressed, and they're struggling to find that line where work ends and life begins. But what's driving this? Well, technology was supposed to set us free, right? Remote work, flexible hours, the ability to collaborate from anywhere. Well, these were sold to us as liberation. And in many ways, they are. But there's a shadow side that nobody really talks about in the corporate brochures. When your laptop is in your office, when Slack lives on your phone, when email notifications ping at midnight, your home isn't just a sanctuary anymore. It's an extension of your workplace. Now, researchers have a term for this constant compulsion to check and respond to work communications. Telepressure. It's that gnawing feeling that you need to reply immediately. That urgent pull towards your phone, even when you're supposed to be present with your family, your friends, most importantly, yourself. And when you're processing work information around the clock, your brain, well, it never truly rests. Now, this leads to what experts call info-obesity. Wow, the first time I heard about this was when I was researching about this topic. Now, that's a state of cognitive overload characterized by chronic stress, burnout, and sleeplessness. Your mind is so stuffed with work inputs that it never gets the space to decompress and recover. Now, I want to be careful here, because this isn't just about feeling tired or having a bad week. The human cost of this always-on culture has been devastating in the most literal sense. In recent times, we've seen cases that have shaken the national conscience. A 26-year-old employee at EY allegedly died due to overwhelming work pressure. A Bajaj Finance employee took his own life following what was described as unbearable workplace pressure and mental torture from seniors. Well, these aren't statistics. These were young people with families, with dreams, with entire lives ahead of them. When Member of Parliament Shashi Tharoor called for legislation to end inhumane workplace conditions, he wasn't being hyperbolic. He was responding to a genuine crisis playing out across office buildings and home workstations throughout the country. So, here's where it gets really interesting. We're witnessing a genuine clash of worldviews in Indian workplaces, and it's largely falling along generational lines. On one side, you have the established corporate culture, the mindset that equates long hours with dedication, that sees being constantly available as proof of commitment. This is the world where senior executives advocate publicly for 70 or even 90-hour work weeks, where hustle culture isn't a criticism, but a badge of honor. All right, friends, just bear with me, you know, on this episode. I have a stuffy nose just coming out of a flu. All right, getting back. On the other side, you have a younger workforce that's fundamentally rejecting this framework. Among Gen Z workers, 63% say they would consider quitting their jobs if their right to disconnect wasn't respected. That's not a fringe position. It's a majority of an entire generation drawing a line and saying, this far, no further. And this is not just about preference. There's real fear embedded in this dynamic. 79% of employees surveyed admitted that they're afraid that ignoring after-hour communications could harm their career prospects or delay promotions. So people are answering those late-night messages not because they want to, not because it's genuinely urgent, but because they're terrified of the professional consequences of setting boundaries. Now, this creates a particularly insidious cycle. Everyone responds after hours because everyone else responds after hours. It becomes normalized, expected, baked into the culture. And anyone who tries to maintain boundaries gets labeled as not being a team player, not being hungry enough, not being committed to success. There's also a critical gender dimension to this that doesn't get enough attention. In India's social structure, women still disproportionately shoulder what researchers call the second shift, unpaid household and caregiving work that continues after the official workday ends. When professional obligations bleed into evening hours, it's often women who bear the compounded burden. The right to disconnect isn't just about individual well-being. It's also about creating conditions where more equitable distribution of household responsibilities become possible. Now, let me address the elephant in the boardroom. The counterargument to all of this, the one you'll hear from industry leaders and corporate commentators, goes something like this. India is a developing nation. We have a narrow window to capitalize on our demographic dividend. Our competitors aren't taking breaks. If we want to grow, we want to compete globally. We need to outwork everyone else. And look, I understand where this comes from. There's genuine anxiety about India's economic trajectory. In fact, I had an earlier podcast episode which spoke about just exactly that. Can India become rich before it gets older? Do check that podcast episode too. Now, these opportunities is important to be seized, you know, because these might not last forever. But here's where the data tells a more complicated story. Studies consistently show that productivity doesn't scale linearly with hours worked. In fact, productivity typically plateaus after 50 hours per week, and activity declines when workers exceed 60 hours. Beyond a certain point, you're not getting more output. You're getting exhausted people making more mistakes, missing creative solutions, and burning through their capacity for sustained performance. The math here is counterintuitive, but important. A rested worker returning with focus and motivation often produces more value in 40 hours than an exhausted worker stumbling through 60. The always-on culture isn't bad for workers. It might actually be bad for the very economic competitiveness it claims to serve. Companies dealing with high attrition rates, low morale, and employees who are physically present but mentally checked out aren't winning the productivity game. They're losing talent to competitors who offer better balance. They're absorbing the hidden costs of burnout, medical leaves, mistakes, decreased innovation, institutional knowledge walking out of the door. Now, against this backdrop, something remarkable is happening today in India's policy circles. The conversation has shifted from should employees have a right to disconnect to how do we implement this right effectively? Member of the Parliament, Indian Parliament, Supriya Sule has reintroduced the Right to Disconnect Bill 2025 in the Lok Sabha. Now, this isn't just a symbolic gesture. It's a detailed legislative framework with real teeth. The bill proposes creating an employees welfare authority that would oversee compliance, particularly for companies with more than 10 employees. Now, this body would monitor how companies handle after-hour communications and ensure workers aren't being pressured to remain constantly available. Now, for employers who don't comply, the bill proposes a financial penalty calculated at 1% of total employee remuneration. That's a scalable fine designed to hurt regardless of company size. A startup and a multinational would both feel the impact proportionally. The bill also recognizes that some after-hour works might be genuinely necessary. In those cases, employees who agree to work outside designated hours would be entitled to overtime compensation at normal wage rates. You see, the point isn't to ban all flexibility. It's to ensure that extra availability comes with fair compensation, rather than being extracted as an unspoken expectation. Perhaps most innovatively, the legislation proposes that the government establish counseling services and digital detox centers to help citizens manage work-life balance. This acknowledges that the challenge isn't purely legal. It's a cultural and psychological dimension that needs supporting infrastructure. Meanwhile, down south, in God's own country, Kerala, has introduced its own Right to Disconnect bill aimed at private sector employees, with provisions for district-level grievance committees. Now, if this bill is enacted, Kerala would become the first Indian state to legislate this protection, potentially creating a template for others to follow. Now, if you're thinking this sounds radical or untested, it's worth understanding that India would be joining a growing international movement, not pioneering into unknown territory. France, they were the trailblazers here, establishing a legal right to disconnect back in 2017. Large French companies are now required to negotiate digital charters with unions, explicitly defining when employees can and cannot be contacted. The French recognized early that the digital transformation of work required corresponding protections for workers' personal time. Spain followed in 2018, mandating that employers implement internal policies on digital disconnection, backed by monetary fines for companies that don't comply. Portugal went further in 2021, making it legally impermissible for employers to contact remote employees outside of work hours, with violations treated as administrative offenses. Now, most recently, Australia enacted legislation in 2024, giving employees an enforceable right to refuse unreasonable contact outside work hours. Australian workers can now take legal action if this right is ignored, shifting the power dynamic significantly. India's proposed framework draws on lessons from all of these models. It incorporates the anti-retaliation protection seen in Australia. You can't be punished for exercising your right to disconnect, while also including the scaled financial penalties that have proven effective in Spain and Portugal. Let's be honest here about the complications here, because this isn't as simple as flipping a switch. Now, India's economy is deeply integrated with global operations. You see, our IT sector, our business process outsourcing industry, our customer service operations, well, these often support clients across multiple time zones. A software team in Bangalore working with a client in California exists in a genuinely different operational reality than a manufacturing facility with purely domestic operations. Healthcare workers, emergency responders, critical infrastructure operators. Now, these roles have legitimate requirements of off-hours availability that cannot be simply legislated away. Then there's the definitional challenge. For salaried professionals in flexible or remote roles, where does work actually begin and end? If you're checking email at 9 p.m. because you took a long lunch to attend your child's school event, are you being exploited or exercising flexibility? The boundaries are genuinely blurry in ways that one-size-fits-all legislation struggles to address. There's also the concern that employers might try to work around regulations by embedding 24/7 availability clauses into employment contracts. Without robust enforcement, the right to disconnect could become another paper protection that doesn't translate into lived reality. Any effective implementation will likely require sector-specific carve-outs, nuanced definitions of what constitutes urgent versus non-urgent communication, and genuine cultural change within organizations, not just legal compliance on paper. But here's what I keep coming back to. Beyond the policy debates and economic arguments, this conversation is really about something more fundamental. What kind of society do we want to build? The legal foundation for the right to disconnect traces back to Article 24 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Now, this guarantees the right to rest and leisure. In India's own constitutional framework, courts have interpreted the right to life under Article 21 to encompass dignity, health, and personal space. When we talk about the right to disconnect, we're really asking, do workers have an inherent claim to their own time, their own mental space, their own ability to exist as full human beings outside their professional roles? Or are employees simply resources to be optimized, available whenever convenience demands? The high-profile tragedies I mentioned earlier aren't abstractions. They're the extreme manifestations of a system that has lost its sense of proportion. When 26-year-olds die from work pressure, when employees feel so trapped that they see no way out, let me tell you, something has gone profoundly wrong in how we've organized our working lives. The right to disconnect isn't anti-growth or anti-ambition. It's a recognition that sustainable performance requires recovery, that human beings aren't machines, and that the collective engine of Indian industries will actually run better in the long term if its individual components are permitted to cool down and recharge. So, where does this leave us? The right to disconnect bill, making its way through legislative channels, represents something important. A formal acknowledgement that current equilibrium isn't working, that workers deserve legal protection from the tyranny of constant availability. Will it solve everything? Of course not. Culture changes slowly. Enforcement is going to be complicated. Global business realities, well, they create genuine tensions. But the conversation itself matters. The fact that we're debating this nationally, that states like Kerala are moving forward independently, that young workers are voting in with their feet when employees don't respect boundaries, these are signs that the ground is shifting. Now, for those of you listening who struggle with this balance, who feel that invisible pressure to always be available, I want you to know your instinct to protect your personal time isn't laziness. It isn't lack of ambition. It's a healthy recognition that you are a human being, not a productivity algorithm. The right to switch off isn't about switching off your ambitions or your commitment to excellence. It's about recognizing those ambitions and that excellence are sustainable only when they're grounded in rest, recovery, and the dignity of a life that extends beyond your job title. All right, before I let you go, I want to speak to you directly, to anyone out there who's genuinely struggling right now. If the weight of work has become unbearable, if you're lying awake at night with your chest tight and your mind racing, if you've started to feel like there's no way out, you're like trapped in a cycle you can't escape, please, please hear me out when I say this. You're not alone. And there is help available. Your mental health is not a weakness. Asking for support is not failure. It's one of the bravest things you can do. Reach out to a mental health professional. Maybe you could talk to a counselor. Confide in someone you trust, like a friend, a family member, anyone who can remind you that your worth isn't measured by your productivity or your availability. Organizations like iCall, Vandrevala Foundation, and Nimhans offer confidential support. Also, your company might have an employee assistance program you've never used. Use it. That's what it's there for. No job, no deadline, no appraisal, no promotion is worth your life. I mean that with everything I have. The work will always be there. Emails will keep coming. But you, the person listening to this right now, you are irreplaceable. To your family, to your friends, to everyone whose life you've touched in ways you probably don't even realize. So if you're in a dark place, take that first step. Reach out, talk to someone. And if you know someone who's struggling, be that person for them. Sometimes even a single conversation can change everything. All right, now on a lighter note, if this episode resonated with you, if it made you think, if it sparked a conversation you've been avoiding, I have a small request. Please share this episode. Send it to that colleague who's always online at midnight. Send it to that friend who hasn't taken a proper vacation in 3 years. Send it to your HR team, your manager, well, at your own risk, or anyone else who needs to hear there's a different way to think about work and life. And if you haven't already, hit that follow button from wherever you are listening. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever you get your audio from. Following the show is the single best way you can make sure you don't miss future episodes. And honestly, it helps the podcast reach more people who need to hear these conversations. That's all in today's episode. I'm Nelson John, and I'm grateful you spent this time with me. Take care of your mind, take care of your body, and take care of each other.